Chapter 2 Clyde peeled the wax paper from around the sandwich Abby had made for him that morning and took a big whiff. Turkey and cheese, topped with lettuce, tomato, and plenty of mustard. His favorite. He always ate his lunch outside beneath an awning, sitting on the top step, overlooking the little park across the street. Even during these cold and dreary days in early December, he preferred the outside air to the stuffy and crowded lunchroom. It also afforded him some privacy. Although Sunday wasn't officially a work day, most of the time staff, particularly reporters, worked anyway because, in the words of their chief editor, "the truth never takes a day off." Clyde didn't normally work on Sunday, but Tom O'Flannery, his boss in the mailroom, had asked him to come in and work on the backlog stacking up. When O'Flannery offered him more pay, he gladly accepted. He savored each bite of the turkey sandwich. Abby wasn't used to cooking, but she'd risen to the challenge, and she'd certainly mastered the sandwich. That's about all, though, he mused. Her attempt at meatloaf the night before had ended badly. He smiled, thinking how proud she'd been and how he'd forced each burnt bite into his mouth with a thankful smile. He'd eaten every last scrap so he wouldn't have to endure the leftovers at lunch. He consumed the sandwich quickly and found the small apple she'd packed. He rubbed it against his pant leg and jumped when the door burst open and Tom O'Flannery barked, "Cooper! The Japs bombed Pearl Harbor! Lunch break's over!" Before Clyde could ask a question, Tom disappeared back inside. Clyde bit into the apple and stood. On the street, he noticed people darting around as though suddenly in a hurry on this lazy Sunday. "Pearl Harbor," he muttered to himself. "Where the hell's Pearl Harbor?" He finished the apple in a few quick bites and shoved the core back into the bag. He opened the door and the sounds of pandemonium swept over him. Entering the newsroom was like entering a different world. He nearly got knocked over by a sprinting reporter. "Hey, watch out," he said. The man didn't even look back. He had to cross the newsroom to get to the mailroom. He darted and weaved and mostly avoided collisions. He heard snippets of excited conversations about a Japanese air attack against Honolulu. U.S. Navy ships had been sunk, and many sailors confirmed dead. Now it made more sense. Working at the Seattle Times, he couldn't help but be privy to current events. The Japanese had been fighting in Manchuria for years, causing the U.S. and other Western countries to react with trade embargoes. And now they'd attacked. As he entered the mailroom, O'Flannery's face looked as red as the apple he'd just eaten. He shoved the contents of his small desk into a bulky mailbag. "What are you doing?" Clyde asked. Without looking up, he said, "Quitting! You're in charge of the mailroom now." Clyde looked at the other two employees. Floyd's and Gantry's mouths hung open, not comprehending anything happening around them. They always looked that way, but now even more so. Clyde gasped. "Quitting? You can't just quit." "Watch me." He kept stuffing his belongings into the bag.
"But why?"
O'Flannery stopped and stared at Clyde.
"We're on the West Coast. Japs are attacking all over the place. Bangkok, Manila, Pearl Harbor. I'm getting out of here before they set their sights on Seattle."
The color drained from Clyde's face. "Did you say Manila? They're attacking the Philippines?"
"That's right, boyo."
He slung the bag over his shoulder and went to the door. Before opening it, he looked back and said,
"I'm getting out while I still can, and I suggest you get home to your pretty lass and do the same."
With that, he flung the door open, stepped into the mayhem, and Clyde never saw him again. The door swung shut behind him with finality, and both Floyd and Gantry turned their dull eyes to Clyde. He shook his head in wonder. He needed more information. Before he left the mailroom, he instructed, "Just keep doing what you'd normally do, okay?" Floyd said,
"Tom told us what to do."
"Well, do whatever he told you to do last."
They looked at him blankly.
"Sort the mail and get it delivered," Clyde huffed and left the room.
He dodged people as best he could and finally got to the desk of the most junior reporter, Mick Janus. He'd been at the Times for a year and had been friendly to Clyde. They'd even been out for a beer once or twice after work.
He sat at his desk, sorting and reading through papers as quickly as he could. Like everyone else in the newsroom, he looked harried. Large sweat rings reached from his armpits and nearly met in the center of his back, making him look like he'd sprouted angel's wings. Clyde slid in beside him and clutched his arm. "Hey, Mick." Mick looked up from the report he read and quickly went back to it with a dismissive wave.
"I'm busy, Clyde."
Clyde persisted. "Is it true about Manila? The Japs are attacking there, too?" Mick continued to ignore him, and Clyde squeezed his arm and raised his voice.
"I've got a brother in Manila, damn it!"
That got Mick's attention. He turned back to Clyde and asked,
"What's he doing there?"
"He's in the army, for crying out loud."
Mick's face blanched and his massive Adam's apple gurgled up and down like a slow elevator.
"Nothing's for sure on that front. They've definitely attacked Pearl Harbor and killed a lot of our guys, but I haven't heard a solid, verified report from Manila. Bangkok, yes, but not Manila. Not yet, anyway."
"Thanks." Clyde stood and looked around at all the chaos. Mick added, "We've got a lot of troops over there and fighter planes and bombers, too. They'll be all right."
"Thanks, Mick. I sure the hell hope you're right."
"Good news is you'll definitely get a promotion now."
Clyde looked at him in surprise.
"How so? A war?
This is big news. They'll need every reporter they can get their hands on to keep up."
O'Flannery up and left. "He thinks they'll attack Seattle next. He didn't even tell Riggins, just gathered his stuff and left." Mick's phone rang, adding to the symphony of phones already ringing. Before he picked it up, Mick said,
"He's a loon, that one."
He answered the phone, and Clyde could hear the buzz of yelling coming from the other end. Clyde tried to call Abby several times, but the phone line stayed busy, and he supposed operators were prioritizing calls related to the emergency. He would have liked to have called his parents, too, but they didn't have a phone installed. In frustration, he left work early. He doubted anyone noticed. Normally, during the regular work week, the bus ride home bordered on depressing. Few people interacted beyond common courtesy and small talk, but not today. Even though it was Sunday, the bus was full of people gabbing about the attacks. He listened with rapt attention to all the various stories. Having spent several months working at the Times, he knew most of the stories and rumors were pure fantasy. If he had believed everything he'd heard, he would have thought the Japanese had already invaded and beaten the entire U.S. military in a matter of hours, and they'd all need to learn Japanese by tomorrow morning. He ran from the bus stop to his apartment. He sprinted up the four flights of stairs and quickly unlocked the door bolts and burst inside.
"Abby, I'm home! Where are you?"
For a brief moment, he had an irrational fear that he'd interrupt her and Miles in the bedroom. After all, he never came home early. She poked her head around the corner of the kitchen and gave him a beaming smile, immediately putting his fears to rest.
"Darling, what are you doing home so early?"
she asked, while wiping her greasy hands on her filthy apron. The smell of slightly burnt something filled the air. He strode across the small living room and embraced and kissed her mouth. She tensed for a moment, then relaxed and kissed him back passionately. They finally parted, and she breathlessly asked,
"What's gotten into you?
Haven't you heard the news?"
"News? What news? I've been in the kitchen most of the day."
He darted to the radio and turned it on. She waved her hand.
"That thing's been awful today. I just got static, so I switched it off."
He moved the dial until he found the news station. Before he turned it up, he said, "The Japanese bombed Honolulu." She gasped and raised her hand to her mouth.
"What? When?"
"Lunchtime here, but morning for them, I think." He turned up the radio and they listened as bulletins interrupted regularly broadcast programs. When one report mentioned Manila, Clyde cursed.
"Damn it!" "Oh my God, your brother," she gasped. Have you heard from him?"
"The last letter was 2 weeks ago, but nothing since." She put her hand on his shoulder and he turned to her and they hugged.
"He'll be okay. He's a good soldier. They'll be ready,"
she tried to assure him. "I hope you're right.
It's murder not knowing. He's half a world away. He might be fighting for his life right now." "What about your parents? Do they know?"
"They don't have a phone, so I couldn't call. I couldn't even get an operator to pick up when I tried calling here.
Abby's face flushed and her lower lip quivered. She couldn't keep the fear from her voice.
What does this mean? Are we at war?
He gripped her shoulders and said, I guess we are. There's no way around it now.
What? What will you do?
Mick thinks there'll be plenty of jobs opening up in the next few weeks. The paper will need every reporter they can get their hands on.
You won't enlist, then?
He looked as though he'd eaten something rancid. Enlist? No, he said louder than he meant to. He thought he saw a flash of disappointment in her eyes, and he amended, At least, not until we know more about what's going on. Perhaps they'll come to some kind of peace terms. She looked down and wiped a tear from her cheek. He said tenderly, Hey, don't cry. He pulled her into his arms, and she wept softly on his shoulder. I won't leave you, darling, he said tenderly.
You signed up for the draft. What if they simply take you?
Clyde furrowed his brow. I'd forgotten about that. Well, like I said, we'll wait and see.
What about your cousin? He's in the army, too.
Sean? She nodded, and he said, He's probably still in basic training. He thought about his younger cousin. He'd never been on track for college, even though he could have gotten a scholarship for playing baseball. He'd always wanted to be in the service, and the troubles in Europe and the looming war talk had sealed the deal for him. He'll get his wish now. I just hope it's not more than he bargained for.
What do you mean?
He thinks war is all glory and earning medals. He's read too many comic books. From the stories I hear at the paper, the war in Europe's brutal. The editor has had to cut some reports because they were too brutally honest. Thousands of people are dying every day over there, and he'll be one of the first combat troops sent there. His timing couldn't be worse.
Or better in his mind, she stated.
Here's your new desk, Clyde. You'll assist Mick for 2 weeks. If you prove yourself and Mick and the others think you're ready, we'll put you out there as a full-time reporter.
Clyde couldn't keep the smile off his face. He knew he looked like an idiot, but he couldn't believe the changes that had happened since the attack on Pearl Harbor a little over a week before. Every day, more and more young men left the Times to join the service. The Japanese sneak attack had awoken a patriotic fervor that swept through the country like a tidal wave.
Thanks, Mr. Scotchman. I'll do my best.
The gruff veteran editor's nose seemed to be even redder and more bulbous than normal. The gaping pores resembled dimples and pits. Scotchman growled something under his breath and stalked off to his darkened office behind the door with the spider-webbed glass. Mick Janus slapped Clyde's back and held out his hand.
Congratulations, Clyde. You'll do just fine.
He picked up a stack of papers overflowing his inbox and handed them to Clyde.
You can start by sifting through these.
Clyde took them and dropped them onto his clean desk.
What are they? Reports from the public. Most are bullshit. You'll find everything from ghost sightings to Japanese aircraft carrier sightings inside the Sound. Just thumb through them and look for anything that catches your eye. Anything that might be true and that we should follow up on.
Is there always this much? He asked as he read the first few scrawled notes.
Nah. With all the war news, I've been too busy to focus on anything else. And some of it's from McClintock's and Hubert's pile. It's usually a third of that at the most.
Hubert left too?
Mick didn't stop pounding away at his typewriter while he answered.
Yeah, this morning. He wants to join the Marines. Thinks they'll be the ones to fight the Japs. He had a brother at Pearl.
Jeez, I didn't know that. Did he die?
No. He's wounded. Badly burnt. Chuck wants revenge. I guess I can't blame him for that.
How about you? You got anyone in the service?
He read and discarded a report from someone claiming they'd definitely seen a Japanese battleship a few hundred yards off the coast. Clyde answered,
Yes, remember? A brother somewhere near Manila.
Mick stopped typing and stared at him.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. Manila! The Japs are pounding that area.
I know. He held up another sheet of paper and smiled.
Alien spacecraft sighting.
He shoved it into the growing pile in the wastebasket. I'm going to need a bigger trash can.
Aren't you worried? Your brother's probably catching hell right now.
Clyde sighed heavily and stopped sifting.
Well, of course I'm worried. But what the hell can I do? I am way over here and he's way over there.
I don't know. Just, well, I'm not sure I could just sit behind this desk if I had a brother in the war. I mean, actually under attack. I'd have to help.
By joining the service? How can my joining the service help my brother? Hell, by the time I get through basic training, this whole thing will be over.
Nick went back to typing. I doubt that's true. Basic's only 3 months long now. 90 days and you'd be fighting the Japs.
That's short. Mick nodded and Clyde said, who's to say where I'd get sent? The bigger problem's in Europe.
You signed up for the draft back in September. Mick said it as a matter of fact.
Of course. It's the law.
Only a matter of time before both of us are drafted.
You really think so?
After Pearl, half the country signed up. They probably have more than they can handle.
Once they get through the initial burst, they'll need more bodies. I guarantee you that. And then you'll be stuck with whatever branch they need you in. Probably the Army. That's why Chuck enlisted in the Marines.
Clyde asked, what about you? Why haven't you enlisted?
I've got no preference, really. I grew up an orphan. I've got no real family, so I'll go when and where they need me. Maybe they'll pick me up as a reporter.
A war correspondent.
He rubbed his chin.
That actually sounds pretty good.
War correspondent.
All I really want to do is raise a family. Abby and I are happy, and we want to start a family as soon as possible. With this new job, I'll be able to afford a much nicer apartment, maybe even a house.
Well, that's a nice dream, but this war is going to get in the way. Being a reporter won't keep you from the draft either. It's not an essential wartime job. There are plenty of old guys around to keep the news flowing. And to tell you the truth, despite what the Constitution says, the military doesn't really like us that much. The less news, the better.
Just when things are going my way.
Clyde shook his head in frustration. I'm not sure Abby would handle it too well.
Millions of other women are in the same boat.
Mick stopped typing abruptly and grinned mischievously.
I hadn't really thought about that. Soon there'll be a lot less competition around here.
Under his breath, Clyde said, that's what I'm afraid of.
What was that?
Oh, nothing. Just wondering what I should do.
Well, I'd say you've got maybe a month before you get a letter from the armed services requesting your presence at the nearest recruitment office.
When Clyde returned home to his tiny apartment, he smelled cooked onions and burnt toast.
I'm home,
he said in a sing-song voice. The radio blared out a jazz riff, and he could hear Abby banging something against the counter, keeping the beat. She obviously hadn't heard him, so he snuck to the corner and peeked around. Abby's disheveled hair hung on her shoulders and bounced as she undulated to each fresh note coming from the radio. A saxophone player took over, and Abby lifted the wooden spoon she'd been drumming with and put it to her lips and blew out her cheeks. He covered his mouth to keep from laughing. He couldn't take his eyes off her. Her hips swayed, and even though smoke poured from the oven, he didn't want to interrupt her. She glimpsed him from the corner of her eye and startled.
Oh, my goodness, she said, holding her hand to her heaving chest. You scared me.
Her face flushed red and she said, you weren't supposed to see that. He reached over and turned off the oven, then put his hands on her hips and leaned in for a kiss. She had flour and grease on her face, but he didn't care. They kissed and swayed to the music with their hips firmly pressed together. She ran her hands through his hair.
I've never really liked jazz, but I gave it a try today, and now I can't stop.
He kept pressing into her, and they swayed to the slowing beat.
If it makes you move like that, then it's all right with me.
She broke away from his grip and said, you're trying to seduce me. She wagged a finger at him.
Not until after dinner. I've worked hard on it.
She turned away and opened the oven door. Smoke billowed out.
and she wafted it away with her hand towel until she could see inside. Oh, I've done it again. It's burnt. He reached around her and opened the tiny kitchen window. The smoke swirled and eventually drifted out into the alley. He squinted into the black abyss of the oven. What is, or was, it? He asked carefully. A roast. I stood in line for an hour and got one of the last ones from Mr. Hancock at the butcher block. She pouted her lower lip. And now I've ruined it. Nonsense. Just the outside's burnt. We'll just cut that bit off. It'll be fine. It smells delicious. She put her hands on her hips and said, It smells burnt. She pushed him out of the kitchen. Go relax. It'll be a few minutes before everything's ready. You can tell me about your day, Mr. Reporter Man. He told her about his day of sifting through the pile of rumors and tips from local citizens. By the end, they were both laughing. She put the strips of usable meat on the table along with sautéed onions and charred biscuits. Before she sat down, she sifted through a pile of mail and handed him a letter. This came for you. He looked at the return address, hoping it might be from his brother. It's from my cousin Sean. Oh, my. What's it say? He must be out of basic training. I don't think they let you write letters. He opened it and read it to himself first. Sean could be crude, and he didn't want to read anything offensive in front of Abby. He pursed his lips and set the letter on the dining table. Well, what's it say? She pressed. He's out of basic and he's volunteered for a parachuting outfit. Parachuting? Like they do at carnivals out of balloons? They do them out of airplanes, too. It's a new thing, but he says he wishes he hadn't volunteered because the training is 16 weeks long and he thinks he's going to miss the war. That's ridiculous. Surely the war will last longer than that. Yes, but he's worried they will never use his unit for combat. Thinks there'll be more of an exhibition-type thing. She reached across the table. May I? Of course. He handed her the letter, and she read it, raising her eyebrows at a few points. He took a bite of the tough meat, and by the time he'd gotten it small enough to swallow, his jaw ached. He scooped up the cooked onions to cover up the charred taste of the meat. She put the letter down and asked, How is it? He dabbed his mouth with his napkin. It's great, Abby. Thank you. Liar, she said as she cut a piece of meat in half. A paratrooper, he called them. How brave of him. Do you think you could jump out of an airplane? My goodness, I doubt I could. I've never even been in an airplane before. Jumping out of one doesn't sound like a good idea at all. They continued sawing through the meat and forcing it down, using generous gulps of water and milk. Their conversation turned to everyday life stuff, but Clyde couldn't shake how Abby's eyes had lit up when she'd mentioned paratroopers.